This meeting of House Education Committee will come to order. Today is Monday, March 27th, and the time is 8:04 a.m. Members of House Education present are Vice Chair Parrish, Representative Ivy Sponholz, Representative Zach Fansler, Representative Chuck Kopp, Representative Dave Tallarico, and myself, Representative Harriet Drummond. We have a quorum to conduct business. You know the drill about cell phones. Today our recording secretary is Kelly Burnett, and Alex Beebe Guidice is our LIO moderator, assisting with teleconferencing and tech support. Thank you both. Today we have a packed schedule, and we'll be taking up HB 102, Limited Teacher Certificates, followed by HB 52, Pre-Elementary School Programs, and HB 146, School Tax, PFD, Payment for School Tax. We have heard all of these bills previously, so my intent today is to go over questions and hold public testimony, and we may move some of these bills out if that is the will of the committee. First up, we will have House Bill 102. Would the bill sponsor please come forward and introduce yourselves.
Thank you, Chair Drummond and Committee. For the record, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, Representative of District 35, rural Southeast Alaska, and also Reed Magnans. But we are here to be at the committee's beck and call for questions or anything else that we can be helpful with.
Excellent. Do you have any issues you'd like to walk us through on this bill today, or are we at a point where we can just take questions and move on?
None that come to mind right now beyond what the committee has already considered and worked through.
Okay.
So I will look at Reed as I say that.
All right. Any questions from the committee on this bill? All right. This is our third hearing on this bill. We've amended it once. We have had public testimony on this bill, but I want to make sure there are no more testifiers. I will reopen public testimony if there's anyone in the room who wishes to testify on this bill. Okay, let's see. I don't have anybody online, so I will not open public testimony. Seeing no one, I think we're ready to move this bill. Would any members like to speak to this bill before we have a motion? Seeing none, Representative Parrish, may I have a motion on House Bill 102?
Certainly, Madam Chair. I move version 30-LS0237/D of HB 102 as amended from the Education Committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Seeing no objection, let's see. The bill passes. I'm going to take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. We are back on the record. Up next, we have House Bill 52. We haven't heard this bill since the beginning of February, so would the bill sponsor please come forward and remind us about what this bill does?
Good morning, members of the House Education Committee. For the record, Representative Scott Kawasaki, District 1 in Fairbanks. Again, House Bill 52 is a bill relating to pre-elementary, pre-K programs within the state. It would provide for statewide, universal, voluntary pre-K within every school district that wishes to take it up. We know that kids that have been able to take a pre-K program perform better on tests. They graduate in higher numbers. They're in adult life, they're more frequently able to get jobs, be off of state public assistance, and also are able to go into college in higher percentages. So this bill, again, it creates that sort of setup. So using both the school districts, individual pre-K programs, and Head Starts and other types of early education, it's my intent that we offer early education to all kids that are age 3 to 5. That's essentially what the bill does.
All right. Representative Sponholz, you have a question?
Yeah, I do. Through the chair, morning.
Good morning.
Representative Kawasaki. I'm a huge fan of pre-K because I think that I think we know the evidence is that it's more than just an education program. It's also an inoculation against a lot of the social and health challenges that people that Alaskans face. We've been hearing about adverse childhood experiences a lot, and studies show that children who have strong adult role models in their lives that are caring, that have opportunities to develop self-confidence and develop problem-solving skills, develop what we call resilience, which helps them be healthier, happier, less likely to experience heart disease, diabetes, as well as less likely to be addicted to drugs or incarcerated, all of those things. One question I had about this particular bill, though, was about the voluntary nature of it. How is it that you've structured it so that it's voluntary? Is it voluntary on the part of the individuals? Is it voluntary on the part of the districts? Could you go into that a little bit?
Thank you, Representative Sponholz, through the chair. And I did forget to mention the health aspect, but you being the chair of the Health and Social Service Committee, appreciate that comment. So the voluntary part comes in two parts. One, some school districts, like the current pre-K grant system that we have in place, some districts chose to do it, some districts chose not to do it. It would really be up to the school district to decide whether they wanted to do it. And then secondarily, it would be up to the parent to basically enroll their kids in a pre-K program. Right now, as you know, compulsory school age is not until 6. So even kindergartners that are within that age range, it's still a voluntary system for those kids and for those parents. And it's really for the parents to decide at that point whether their child should enroll in early education or pre-K.
Okay. So just to clarify, we're not forcing anybody to send their kids to pre-K programming, and we're not forcing school districts to do this. This is just allowing for them to do that.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Sponholz, that's absolutely correct.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions for the sponsor of the bill? All right. Seeing none. Thank you, Representative Kawasaki. I'm going to open up public testimony for this bill. We have several people lined up to speak today. So I'm going to start with the people in the room and then move to off-net sites. I've got Samantha Adams. I'm opening public testimony. Just make sure we get that gavel in there.
I'm just excited.
Excellent. Good morning. Welcome. Please give us your name and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Okay, thank you. My name is Samantha Adams, and I am a licensed child care and preschool teacher, and I have been here in Juneau for the last 10 and a half years. And one of the things that I really like to do is network with my colleagues in early childhood education, and I also like to work closely with teachers in the school district to really define what it is we hope for these children to achieve, and what our role as preschool teachers is. And time again, one of the things that comes up when I speak with kindergarten, K through 3 teachers is the need for school readiness. And really, all that is a broad term that defines cumulative gains that are occurring across developmental domains for children from birth to age 5. And there are developmental areas, to come to mind, fine motor and literacy, where children can learn those in the home, but only if the parents have access to resources designed to help those skills develop. Fine motor, for example, is making sure children have access to writing utensils and scissors and Play-Doh and all of the things that help them refine their fine motor. Literacy, as we all know, is equipping children and families at an early age with a print-rich environment and lots of reading materials and resources. So we can support families in the home doing that, but there are some areas of development where group settings in preschool are fundamental to the development of some of these skills. One of those is social-emotional competency, and children need the opportunity to work in a social setting with peers to help problem-solve, self-regulate, be prepared for social settings, and that occurs in a preschool classroom. Oftentimes when I talk with my colleagues and kindergarten teachers, as long as that foundation has been laid for children to have those abilities, those social-emotional competencies, they can help support that child academically with science, math, all of those other things. But if children come to the classroom and they're not socially, emotionally prepared to be there, you take preschool is a great setting for this because through the Department of Early Development Education, the group size is 12 to 1. So you have 12 preschoolers and one teacher, and that is an ideal group size for helping support children develop social-emotional competency. And when they go off to kindergarten, it jumps from 12 to 1 to 22 to 1. And so if children are entering into kindergarten with those skills, a teacher with 22 children isn't spending the bulk of her time trying to help children socially, emotionally. She's able to focus on that academic part. So, and there's a myth regarding fade out and whether the positive benefits for young children last beyond early childhood. And as a Head Start preschool child care kid myself, I can testify to the fact that it doesn't fade out. It sticks with you for your life. So, thank you.
Any questions for the testifier? Thank you very much, Ms. Adams. Oh, sorry, Mr. Parrish, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Ms. Adams, for your testimony. I would like to know, I know that you're working on the problem of pre-K here in Juneau. How much of an impact do you think that this bill could have in providing state support?
I really feel one of the things that I think is very important to the success of any preschool program, right now there are lots of different delivery methods for preschool education. You've got programs that are not with the school district, but they're certified through deed as preschools. And then you've got like family child care that's providing preschool services, and then providing wraparound child care. And then you've got religious programs that are providing morning-only preschool sessions or afternoon-only preschool sessions. And so in order for this to broadly impact our communities, we have to make sure that however we're administering the funds or helping establish these programs, we need to keep in mind all of those programs that aren't part of the public school system that are providing these services to their communities. Because in every neighborhood, in every nook and cranny, there are programs providing these services to young children. It's not just public school. And again, that's why I work so closely with the school district and teachers within the district, because I really want it to be a partnership so that those short and long-term outcomes for the children are positive and sustained.
Thank you, Ms. Adams.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I have a question. It sounds like you have a pretty good handle on the many programs that are available in the Juneau area.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there are many programs available in every community, or in, I should say in most communities. The really small ones are the ones that concern me. I assume you're taking time off from your job as a preschool provider.
I'm actually closed today for Seward's Day. It's one of the holidays.
Thank you for reminding us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What is the cost of a preschool program for the private sector
private
in Juneau?
Sector.
Do you know roughly what that costs per month?
Yes. So Monday through Friday from 9 to noon is my current preschool session, and it runs $415 a month. $415 a month.
Okay.
The tricky part here is where you have families that want that preschool opportunity but need child care services.
Mm-hmm.
And unless they're consolidated, you have families taking children to multiple programs.
Right.
And so it's really, it's a question to put out to families, and maybe AUIC and Joy Lyon can assist
mm-hmm.
with that
mm-hmm.
because so many families don't just want high quality preschool opportunities for their children, but they also need child care to wrap around it.
Right.
So.
Okay, that's a true story. Okay, and preschool programs in the Juneau School District, are there any that you're aware of?
Yes. Right now what the Juneau School District offers is an integrated preschool program in a classroom of 12 children, and half of those children are considered special needs. It's a peer integrated preschool, so they have peers in the classroom, cohorts, children their age to model some of the skills that we hope to have them achieve prior to kindergarten entry.
Is that what you mean by integrated?
Integrated, mm-hmm.
Integrated with special ed kids
mm-hmm.
who are identified at,
yes.
at what age?
That's where we play a fundamental role
mm-hmm.
because we see these children. We're their first contact outside the home
mm-hmm.
from birth to age five.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes we're able to partner with REACH, with early referral, anywhere between birth and 18 months to 3 years, because that's when REACH start, you know, at three, they transition to the integrated pre-K or student services through the school district. And so it just depends on the age that we notice, observe, assess, and refer a child for a special need.
Excellent.
But it can be anywhere from birth to five.
I see this is going to raise some more questions. Go ahead, Representative Parrish.
That's a very interesting area. My one of my uncles had Down syndrome, and yet his mother was consistently convinced that any day he would snap out of it and go on to become a doctor. At the end of the day, he didn't. He still lived a very, very fulfilling life. But it is interesting to think that parents will often overlook areas where their children may have special needs. Could you say what percentage of students with whom you interact, you might refer? Maybe they've got hearing or vision.
Yes, I actually work very closely with student services through the school district for referrals. And in the past 10 and a half years, I've maybe referred three or four children. And this is where our role, I think quality programs with high quality qualified teachers are in a position to do these referrals. And what happens is not anybody without that experience, knowledge, and background can look at a child and say, oh, bam, that child has something wrong with them. But it becomes a delicate balance where you know those indicators, you have that knowledge, and yet families are kind of reluctant to hear that message. And so when you're doing referrals for children, in order to get that positive outcome, you need to be able to support a family and not come from it as a from a stance of judgment or what are you doing wrong as a parent. It's truly a partnership, and we have to, regardless of where this setting, these preschool settings occur, all of these programs, in order for the outcomes to be positive long term for these children, we need to partner with the families. And in the four that I've referred over the last 10 and a half years, one was really reluctant. And that child is now in the fifth grade, and the parent has, over the years, it took some time to get that parent to proceed with a referral. But once that child did, it was just discovered that all these behavioral issues were related to the child needing glasses and not being able to see. It was as simple as that.
Wow.
I've had another family of the four that just took some reassurance and guidance, and then I had two others that saw the behavior, saw the challenges, knew something was wrong, and just needed the support to proceed, because it can be scary to go into an IEP meeting with the school district and really not know, you know, what it means for your child. So I've sat through IEP meetings with parents and said, we're going to do this together. Your child is going to be fine, because it's hard.
Thank you. Well, the sooner you can intervene, I think we all agree, is better. Thank you.
It's been a while since I've been to a pediatrician with my kids. Do you see that the pediatricians in Juneau are making referrals and, for example, identifying vision and perhaps hearing issues?
And that's, again, where we're a partnership, because a pediatrician gets the child for maybe a 30-minute period at an appointment, or a well-child visit, or a child is sick, so it's an acute issue that the doctor is seeing. Whereas we see the children, if we have them full day for childcare in addition to preschool, we see them for 7 hours a day. And so oftentimes what we do is we refer the child back to their pediatrician if we're noticing things with the child. And then the pediatrician refers information back to us. And it's, again, that's where all of these different organizations and groups are working in tandem for the best outcome for the children. Pediatricians do catch it. They catch vision things. They catch hearing things. They're oftentimes pretty well equipped to catch some serious issues. But it's not without input from all of the people in that child's life. So I've worked closely with pediatricians before on concerns with children.
The kids in your care are lucky kids, I'll tell you. That's I'm very impressed. Any further questions for Samantha? All right, seeing none, thank you so much for coming today.
And I'd just like to add, I did submit a four-page email. That was like condensing four pages into 2 minutes. But please take time to read what I sent, because it's very, very important. And as a practitioner doing this work every single day, it matters.
Excellent.
And then this decision matters. So
thank you very much.
I
appreciate the email as well. We'll be sure to take a look at it. All right. Next, we have Trevor Storrs online in Anchorage. Trevor, good morning. Are you with us?
Good morning, yes.
You know the drill. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for this opportunity to testify before you on HB 52. I'm Trevor Storrs, for the record, and I'm the executive director of the Alaska Children's Trust. We are the statewide organization focused on the prevention of child abuse and neglect. And I've testified before, so I won't go through all of the same things. What I will give you is an idea. As you all are struggling with this $3 billion deficit and how best to situate our staff, or our state, I should say, you are being presented with a great opportunity here, and it's really the concept of investment, and it's investing in the young. When they first enter our system, waiting for kindergarten, we have lost a lot of precious time. HB 52 really gives us, and really school districts and communities, the opportunity to really invest in their kids at a very early stage, so they are well established, not just for school success, but really life success. Pre-K is not about test scores. It's not preparing kids to be able to read or do math. It really sets them on the stage to be successful, contributing adults in our state. If we don't want to have high Medicaid costs, having to build another jail, being concerned about law enforcement, worried about homelessness, and the list goes on and on and on, we need to really rethink our system. What's being presented with HB 52 is that idea. And the greatest thing is this is not a brand new idea. This is existing throughout our world. People are investing in pre-K, early childhood development, and they are seeing dramatic changes in their communities. So we are not trying something new and blindly. We are really talking about investing in something that has been proven in research. This is evidence-based. This is a good investment. It does have a high return on the dollar, and it will, over time, truly address our deficit and put our state in a financial sustainability path for not just today, but most importantly, tomorrow. We highly encourage you to support HB 52. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Trevor. Any questions for the speaker? Okay, seeing none, thank you for coming this morning. Next up in Anchorage is Stephanie Berglund. Stephanie, are you with us?
Yes, good morning. Thank you to the chair and committee. Thank you, Representative Kawasaki, for introducing this bill and for others who have supported it. I'm Stephanie Berglund, the CEO of THREAD. We are Alaska's Child Care Resource and Referral Network. And THREAD strongly supports and encourages HB 52 and any expansion of pre-K in Alaska. As you know, decades of research have shown that pre-K makes a big difference, not just in the short term to get children ready to start school, but in the long term as children grow, become employed, and contribute to the strength of the economy. We know that the most formative years of brain development come well before a child starts kindergarten. And this brain development is critical as we need a future workforce of individuals who achieve education beyond a high school degree and who have developed advanced technical skills. I know we're in a tough budget situation, but we must think about the future and invest in our future. Our budget will improve significantly when we invest more of our resources to productive endeavors rather than mediation, incarceration, and welfare. There's lots of research that show the rate of return and long-term investments of pre-K. Two ways I want to highlight. One is that benefits come from cost savings, such as reduced spending in special education and grade retention, as well as lower involvement in the child protection, welfare, and criminal justice systems. And secondly, benefits may flow from greater economic productivity, higher earnings as adults. They say for every $10,000 invested into a child, that they can have future earnings increase by 10% or even about $50,000 more over their lifetime. THREAD encourages HB 52 to be inclusive of a mixed delivery system. By offering pre-K through school districts and community-based quality child care settings, parents and children can benefit. Parents have the work support that they need and wraparound support that they need for full-day care, and children have continuity of care, which is important for their healthy development. THREAD estimates that there are only 50% of available quality child care and pre-K spots for families who need it. That's one space for every two children who have all of the adults in their households working. THREAD encourages you to expand voluntary pre-K to all four-year-old children in Alaska and to do so in a mixed delivery setting to meet the needs of families. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Berglund. Any questions for Ms. Berglund? I actually have one. You just mentioned, Stephanie, that there's just one space for every two children for whom parents are looking for preschool. Can you expand on that statistic, please?
Mm-hmm. So we estimate for children who are, we know that children need care often through the age of 12 is usually when we see the potential need for care start to wean a little bit. But for most families, they have the highest need for quality early childhood programming, whether that's in child care, Head Start, or in preschool, between the ages of 0 and 6. So we estimate that there are, roughly about 40,000 children who have all of their adults in the household working who are under age 6, yet we have less than 18,000 spaces that are licensed or regulated, and we determine that. We qualify that as quality early care and learning spaces. So that doesn't even take into effect the children who, maybe don't have all of the adults in their household working. So we look at that as a potential very high need. We have a huge access issue for quality early care and learning in our state.
Wow. Thank you for the expansion on that statistic. That's a mm-hmm. that's a shocking statistic that less than 1 in 2 have qualified space. All right. Any other questions for the speaker? If not, thank you very much, Ms. Berglund, for speaking with us this morning.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You bet. Next time, next we have Carly Lopez online with us from Anchorage. Carly, are you there?
I'm Carla Lopez from Anchorage. I am calling to voice my enthusiastic support of HB 52 as a step forward for the future of Alaska. I am the parent of two preschoolers. My oldest child, Corbin, has Down syndrome and autism. He's in his third and final year of special education preschool through the Anchorage School District. The support he's received has been critical, but one component has been missing. Per the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or IDEA, Corbin is to be educated in the least restrictive environment. That means that whenever possible, he's to be educated in a classroom with his same age peers. However, that's not currently possible due to the lack of a public preschool program. His program is only available to children that qualify for special education. The district has utilized a Buddy Bear program to bring in a few children that did not experience a disability, but this is not the same as a fully inclusive setting. Outside of preschool, he is fortunate to be in an inclusive child care program with his peers, and it benefits everyone. His classmates understand that Corbin has different needs, like being nonverbal, but they welcome him as just another kid in their class. He's more like than different. Disability is being normalized for these kids. Additionally, Corbin has learned so much through peer modeling. When he first started, he didn't understand how show and tell worked, and as each child item would be passed around the table, it often stopped at Corbin because he didn't want to pass it along. His teacher set him up for success by putting him towards the end of the circle so he could observe the process. And after a few repetitions, he understood the expectation and was able to fully participate. This would be less likely to happen in a setting that only included children with disabilities. There's also a young girl with a disability in my daughter's class, and whenever she accomplishes something new, my daughter comes home so excited to celebrate what her friend was able to do. The class is constantly cheering her on and supporting her success, and how amazing is that? The long-term benefits of early childhood education cannot be disputed, and we need to direct our focus on investing in the Alaska we want 20 years from now. Our current economic situation is not permanent, and smart investments now will lead to great outcomes over time. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Ms. Lopez. Any questions for the speaker? Okay, seeing none, thank you. I have no additional people online. or on the off-net. Anyone else in the room interested in testifying? All right. Seeing no one, I'm going to close public testimony. Universal pre-K is such a big topic. Representative Sponholz and I are working out a joint education, health and social services committee meeting so we can help to remove the funding silos for children from birth to age five that we all know exist in this state and that we've heard from several testifiers today. I know this topic of preschool will fit in nicely with this discussion, so I'm going to set this bill aside for now so that we can have that joint meeting and get a better feel for the big picture. Representative Sponholz, did you want to say something?
No, I guess I can wait.
Okay.
I have a question for Deed. But.
Okay, great. Take a brief at each. We're passing out a document from Representative Parrish, and my aide will get it up on BASIS as soon as we adjourn today. It's from the Washington State Institute for Public Policy, Early Childhood Education for Low-Income Students, a Review of the Evidence and Benefit Cost Analysis. I want to stop and read it right now, but I better not. This stuff fascinates me. Okay. All right, finally on our agenda today is House Bill 146, the school tax bill. We first heard this bill last week, so unless committee members have come up with new questions since Wednesday, I'd like to go straight into public testimony. Okay, seeing no questions. I'm going to, Let's open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on this bill? All right, right, and we'll go to the phone. We have Alan McCarty on line from Seward. Alan, are you with us?
I am.
All right, please, sir, if you would introduce yourself and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Good day. My name is Al McCarty, and I'm with CAPSL, the Citizens Alliance Protecting School Lands, and we are a group from around the state who are trying to protect the school lands and the school funds. And this bill, as we read it, is going to attack the trust fund by 5% every year, and we just want to make sure that the people understand this is a trust, and it's not state money; it's school money. It's the earnings from the trust every year go into the general fund, and they've gone from $24 million a year down to $10 million a year, just because of poor investments from the state. Now, DNR invests the money. I think it's at the very end of the bill, and I think we need to be very cautious to not attack this this trust fund, because in 26 years the fund that's been building since 1915 will be totally gone. That's pretty much where we're at right now.
All right, is that your testimony, Mr. McCarty?
Yes, I would love to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Yes, any questions from the committee? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much for testifying. Next, I have, I don't have anybody else online. Interesting. Owen, you want to? Are you up for testimony or just here for questions?
I'm here for questions.
All right. Representative Tellerico.
I wonder if maybe Owen might want to come up and address the testimony we just heard.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah.
Very good. We're still, public testimony is still open if anybody else pops up in the meantime.
Go ahead. Members of the committee, Madam Chair, my name is Owen Phillips. I'm staff to Representative Klayman. As per my understanding, based on the individual that we just heard, I have not heard of a decrease of 5% over the years, basically because the amount that we'll be taking in will dollar for dollar push the funds into a different component, meaning we will get about $500 million from this bill through taxes. Those will go directly to the school fund, and then, as I understand it, the leftover will just stay in undesignated funds and be allocated elsewhere.
Will those funds be somehow distinguished from the school tax funds, the funds that started out in the education fund?
Madam Chair, I think that is under the discretion of the Department of Revenue, so they will keep track of the funds. As I understand it, they have quite a bit of authority to adopt regulations as to how those funds will be managed.
Okay. Any further questions for the speaker? Okay, seeing none, why don't you stick with us in case any others come up. All right, I'm kind of surprised that we don't have a whole horde of people on the phone with us today. And if anyone else in the room who wishes to testify? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close public testimony. This bill, House Bill 146, has a lot of working parts. I believe that with our current fiscal reality, we need to keep our options open. I feel there are some things in this bill that need to be clarified, but I think I want to let finance do that. I don't want to hold this bill up here so we can give them time to fully vet this bill in that committee. As you could tell from some of the questions last week, we're not used to dealing with revenue bills in this committee. I know I would like to see a more progressive tax scale, but I'm not sure how that would look. I'm not sure how I feel about taxing children who only receive a PFD as income, even though they would benefit from this tax. Those issues to me are less about education policy and more about finance. So I'd like to move this bill out today with the understanding that in its current form, I would not necessarily vote for this bill on the House floor. Any other members would like to speak to this bill today? Representative Parrish, then Representative Talarico.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To a large degree, I share your reservations about the bill. I do consider the change in the PFD allocation to be effectively a tax which we're levying on every Alaskan. And given that that's the most certain part of the plan in the House and Senate to proceed, I think it is appropriate that we have some mechanism to draw revenue from non-residents and from able-bodied adults who are able to bring in other incomes. So, with all that said, I agree that the Education Committee is not the best place for the bill, even though it's a school tax. I think the Finance Committee will be better equipped to address it and more likely to gain robust public testimony. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Parrish. Representative Talarico.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize. I wanted to work on some of this with maybe some other proposals, and I didn't get to that yet. But I guess one of my biggest concerns about the bill, no doubt, I've certainly had constituents and other people talk about, you know, the old school tax. But I think on page 2 in the actual, the rates for adjusted gross income that are listed between lines 4 and lines 13 on page 2 of the bill, I had contact with some people, and that was certainly beyond what they had considered being anywhere near the old school tax, for sure. And a question arose about the upper limit cutoff and maybe not enough transitional spots in the middle. And a legitimate question from people that would know is a lot of our will they're referred to as part-year residents in here, generally have employment somewhere else. And although we're looking to make a collection from them, it seems like it's a very difficult way to set a lower limit and have someone pay into it and not impact year-round Alaska State residents that live under the poverty level. So, you know, this is just kind of a straightforward when you've got any type of tax on someone that makes less than, I think our poverty level, or I remember last year, was about $39,870. Anytime we implement a tax on people that live year-round in Alaska and are currently at that level, that's definitely a huge impact on someone who lives the poverty level, or even 175% of the poverty level and below. So, due to that fact, I'm not supportive of this particular bill, and particularly in the form it's in. So, I just want everyone to know that. I think that's important to have on record. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tallarico. Any other comments? Representative Sponholz, go ahead.
Yeah, and I want to thank Representative Tallarico for his comments. I think they were well thought out. I am incredibly supportive of the overall intent of this bill. I think that, you know, making sure that we help secure funds for one of our constitutional mandates is exceptionally important, and trying to find a way to do that that allows those of us to chip in who have the capacity to do so to chip in a little bit more than those that don't, I think, is reflective of my values. I often think of relate the idea of progressivity with the way that we operate in our families, that when our children are young adults, we always buy their dinner when you go out. And then when they get a little bit older, maybe you go Dutch. And then when they get a little bit older, or we get a little bit older, maybe they start buying our dinner once we're retired. And I think that, having progressivity in a revenue plan like this is appropriate for that reason. I've been on both ends of this income scale, and so I think that's pretty reasonable. I have concerns about the way that it's structured right now, in that I agree that we've got still a pretty disproportionate impact on lower income folks, and we've got a cap at $250,000 a year. And I think that somebody who's making $500,000 or $1 million a year should be paying more than a family that earns $250,000 a year. And so I think this is it's underdeveloped. But I also know that the Finance Committee will invest a lot of time and energy in it. And I fully expect that there will be robust discussion in the Finance Committee and a lot more public engagement in there. So I'm going to support the bill because I support it conceptually, and I think it's really important that we ensure that we're meeting our constitutional mandate to support, public education. And I know that there are some proposals on the table in the other body which would include significant cuts to education, which I don't support. I think that's the worst thing that we could possibly do in this tight fiscal time. So I'll be supporting it, but reluctantly.
Okay. Any further comments from committee members? Okay. Seeing none, I think we're ready for a motion. Representative Parrish?
I move version 30-LS0509/O. of House Bill 146 from the Education Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
I'll object, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative Tallarico. Brief at ease. On the record, Ms. Burnett, would you please do a roll call vote?
House Bill 146. Rep. Sandcock.
No.
Rep. Parrish.
Yes.
Rep. Fansler.
Yes.
Rep. Johnston is absent. Rep. Spanholz.
Yes.
Rep. Talamico.
No.
Chair Drummond.
Yes.
Chair, I have 4 yeas, 2 nays. Thank you.
Okay, with that, the bill passes out of committee. We will sign the paperwork after we adjourn. Our next meeting will be on Wednesday, March 29th at 8 a.m. We have a joint meeting with Senate Education at that time to hear from the State Board of Education. And with that, we are adjourned today at 8:52 a.m.